Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 podcast. The 2020 season is here. We are rocking and rolling, and I am so excited to be back this year with a little bit of a format change, a little bit of a mix-up. My name is Josh Davey. I'm going to be hosting this season with my guys, my boys, Dan Kaplan and Kyle Devitt. Devitt, people are used to you. They know what they're going to get with Kyle Devitt. How is everything up north?
It's pretty great. We're ready to have some fun. Very happy to represent IL North as usual. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to another year of NESCAC domination. It's going to be great.
Eye roll. Verbal meme, eye roll. Anyway, and we also have Dan Kaplan here. So those who are not familiar, Dan started here in the past few months. Dan, do you want to give a little background on your very specific D3 heavy background?
Right, yeah. So I started coaching at York in 2017, right after I graduated from there in 2016. Coached there for 3 years, turned around, got started here in May. I'm really excited to, you know, move forward with all this coverage and focus on IL South.
Dan is a lax rat. He's been hanging around the Inside Lacrosse events for a long time. We played together for a little bit as well. He's a Maryland boy, so he's going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting along with Ken Stockman on the D3 covers this year, and no one is as dialed in as he is, so really excited to have him on board and add a new lens to the perspective that Kyle, Ken, and Matt and I can add each and every week. So just a little bit of the format, how this thing's going to go. Dan and I will talk a lot about the South. Kyle will be watching a lot of games as well, so he'll chime in. We'll let him sort of, Kyle, lead the North coverage as well. We'll talk about the games from the previous week. We will dive in and take a look at the games upcoming. We're going to be recording on Tuesdays, and this will come out on the Inside Lacrosse Podcast Network on Wednesdays. So that's what we love about the D3 life. There will be games that will change our they'll make us look dumb every Wednesday when they come out, which will be pretty cool. And we'll look ahead to set the table a little bit. The Inside Lacrosse Face-Off Yearbook is out and available. We're not going to go through all the preseason rankings right now because we have some actual real games to talk about. But if you are interested in the preseason D3 All-Americans, or you're interested in the top 25 ranking, see where your team lands, make sure you go to InsideLacrosse.com and check out and grab a Face-Off Yearbook. It is 100-something-odd pages of just pure gold. So much Division III content in there, and we're excited to expand on it. So, enough of the background. Let's dive into the action. We had two marquee games from this first weekend in Division III action. Those who have listened to the podcast before, I promise you, as I mentioned, Lynchburg-Salisbury, this is not going to be a Lynchburg-heavy podcast. But the two games this weekend we want to talk about are Lynchburg-Salisbury and York W&L. Let's start with Lynchburg-Salisbury, the number one team in the country, holds on 16-10, defend off the Hornets. Dan, dive in. Tell us about this game.
Yeah, so it was pretty electric in the beginning. They end up going back and forth through the first quarter. Salisbury jumps up on them in the beginning. But by the middle of the second, it's, you know, 4-4, and they're fighting for it. And then, you know, Salisbury just kind of asserts their dominance from there. They get on a run and just never look back. There's a different type of momentum in lacrosse, man. There's like, here we go, we're going, we're pushing. And then there's Salisbury's version of that, where it's just tough to fight back. Plus, Melanfi goes 21 of 22 at the faceoff X. So they're struggling for possessions from the get-go. A lot of standout performances in that game, though. One of them being Griffin Maroney, who really, like, just plugs in and does really, really well, having not played all of last year with an injury. He comes in, starts, and really just, like, makes Lynchburg pay every single time that they're slow on a recovery or anything like that. So he's going to be really interesting to watch going forward. He split time with Pierre Armstrong, who, like, he did a really good job in the off-ball role last year as well, but he just, like, I don't know. What do you think, Kyle? Do you think there was anything for there for any reason for him to play over Maroney moving forward?
I mean, you know, you kind of look for guys like that in any offense, as a guy that can kind of score from anywhere. And the thing about Salisbury is, you know, they're always going to get shots, right? Like, no one's going to go hungry on the Gulls attack as long as they're getting a little PT. I think it's okay to switch that look every once in a while. I think one of the things that struck me in this game for them offensively. Bromwell went down kind of with a non-contact injury. Looked serious, but he came back in the game. And when he was out, I noticed that that's kind of when Lynchburg was making their run there. And I think that's he might be a real key player for them. And they had a couple other guys step in, fill that role. But, you know, Bromwell's a big 6'4", 200-pound dude that's just going to, like, go at people. You know, I think that's the name of the game for everybody that plays for Salisbury is go at people and then pass. They had a couple breaks in this game that were like, you paint them and hang them in the Louvre. They were incredible. So I know I'm the pantomime villain here for hating all the South teams, but I mean, great lacrosse is great lacrosse. I don't really care what the uniform says. It's more like, again, it's a pantomime villain. It's not a real villain. I'm not here to ruin your day per se, but I really liked what I saw at a Salisbury coming back and holding the lead. Not just from faceoffs, but from possessions.
Yeah, you mentioned faceoffs. That's really the story of this game. I think Lynchburg was right with them. Like, they were kind of trading blows in terms of a 6-on-6 offense. But when you win 4 faceoffs, it's in Salisbury, right? There may be some of the other ODAC teams. They might be able to beat up on them with only going 50-50. But winning 4 of 29 faceoffs is not a recipe for success. There were some bright spots for Lynchburg. I know they had some injuries. I think it was Kyle Lewis, Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, had a wrist injury. He's out for a little while. He was kind of an offensive spark for them in the fall. So hopefully we'll get him back sooner or later. Kevin Rogers is the guy for Lynchburg. He had 4 goals. He's a preseason All-American. So good to see him get his, while it just really wasn't enough for the Hornets to get going. I think another guy worth mentioning, who I'll probably talk about later as well, is Tyler Gallagher, is a lockdown defenseman for the Hornets and gave some of those dynamic Salisbury attackmen some trouble. So, like we talked about, the final score, 16-10 Salisbury. It's cool. What we love about D3 is these, like, you're getting 2 powerhouse matchups, 2 teams that are going to be the NCAA tournament playing the second weekend of February. And that's why we all love D3, and that's awesome. So let's pivot a little bit. Actually, this game, York W&L, was in Lexington. So we're going south down Route 29. So York W&L, Dan, you're a York alum. I know you were in the office on Saturday, throwing hats and refusing to sit down. So let's talk a bit about this game and how it played out.
Yes, so this game had me sweating. I was in the office throwing hats around, making a little bit of chaos.
You have like a Canadian accent coming out right now, by the way. You are from Howard County, and you have this like real lacrosse hockey accent coming out. I'm into it.
Listening to myself through a microphone for the first time is really throwing me off. I feel like I'm like shaking right now, and I don't think that it has anything to do with the fact that I've never listened to my own voice before.
You gotta start somewhere.
But yes, I mean, this game, like, the Generals just never quit. Jack Taylor keeps it close in the first half. He makes a bunch of saves and just keeps it really close and keeps it in striking distance for the offense to be opportunistic. Taylor Witherall really impressed me. He ended up with 3 unassisted goals after most of his career has been like an off-ball role, kind of working to find seams. And so for him to come out and have 3 unassisted goals in the first game is a really good step for them moving forward. The part where they struggled on offense was to generate a step. And so for him to be able to do it was really, really, important for them moving forward. I hope to see them kind of start to, like, develop a little bit of continuity. They had played a ton of guys, and I think it's just as a virtue of figuring out what they want to do moving forward with Witherall having graduated.
Yeah, so that's the big hole, right, is the younger Witherall now is stepping up, but losing AJ Witherall, who was like a stud, you know, first-team All-American, those are big shoes to fill.
Absolutely, and so they're going to have to replace his production somehow, and what they're trying to do, I think, is great. They're playing with a much more of a team brand of ball, but what that actually consists of, I think they just need to continue to refine. And they have some key pieces with Ware and Hamill and Mahalan. Like, they have some guys that can really make you pay if you let them. And so it'll be good to watch them moving forward.
Kyle, you had some
ideas. Dan, eyes on how this did game you? Well. How did
oh,
you?
Go for it.
I did. I want to ask Dan, how did you feel about York out shooting WNL 30-13 and only being up by one goal at halftime?
Well, that was most of the reason for throwing the hats, was we had all of these, like, what felt like layup opportunities that just...
They were.
Sprayed wide, you know, or right into Taylor's stick. And actually, that's not even true. Like, Taylor made some really, really good saves, and York hit some pipes, but it was definitely frustrating being all of the miles away that I was and not being able to just, like, do anything about it.
Yeah, shout to my guy Kyle Morris, who actually is the new assistant there, who I didn't know if you guys knew that he and I were friends. So I'm not just a Northern specialist. I got kind of fingers in other pies here. But
your Northern past and his Southern past, I had no idea that you guys knew each other at all. He's the man. He's going to be awesome there.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, just for everyone listening, all Kyles either are best friends or natural nemeses. Luckily, he is not my nemesis. He's a great dude, and he's going to bring a lot to that program. I think, you know, just looking through everything, watching how both these teams played, I think you've got to be really frustrated if you were York, because I feel like York could have won this by 20. I really – and that has nothing to do with Washington Lee's game at all. I think they're a very good team. But York controlled a lot of this game and couldn't get goals out of it. And if I'm looking back at that, I'm a little worried. Because I know it's game one, we're not hitting a panic button here, but if we're watching film in there and we're like, why didn't you shoot low? Why didn't you, you know, like there was a lot of things that could have changed the outcome of this game, and they're all related to shooting and finishing. So I think if you're looking at the scoreline, it's not super impressive, but watching the game, that could have easily been a blowout win for York, and credit to Washington Lee for not making it that. And, you know, you guys were talking about Taylor Witherell. I think he was doing a little too much at the end, and I think the York defense started keying in on him and throwing little back doubles on him and causing a couple turnovers. So, you know, I don't know if the whole baton is passed from brother to brother here, but I think, you know, he's a little better as someone that, you know, is the second Dodge instead of someone that is just their sole initiator. And I don't think, you know, that whole weight is going to land on his shoulders this season, but I do think he's going to be very productive if he can kind of find that secondary role and a primary role and kind of push them together and lead that team in that offense.
Surprisingly, we've talked a lot more about WNL than York. So what did you see out of the York offense, Dan? You know that group really well. Who are the guys that the audience, the listeners need to know about as we follow the Spartans on a potential championship run?
So I'll start with the attack. They graduated 693 points. 693 points. All three of them who graduated from those starting roles at attack last year fall in the top five of the school's all-time scoring. So
that's an insane number.
Yeah, so that was good. That was a daunting task from the end of the season, was who they're going to plug in and what they're going to do to alleviate, you know, losing all of that production. And I really liked what I saw. And what we saw was really that they didn't put the brunt of it in the hands of the attack. They let them be off-ball guys and then really, really work to find seams while the midfield dodged and, you know, made them pay if they didn't slide. And if they did, they found seams. And, you know, they really, really, really looked good for, you know, considering all of the production and experience that they graduated.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, from a broad perspective, looking at it from 1,000 feet above, it's interesting, you know, one game, one weekend in, WNL 0-1, Lynchburg 0-1. And I say that to say that these games matter. And if WNL had an early season win against York and vice versa, Lynchburg had an early season win against Salisbury, those are wins that if WNL and Lynchburg are fighting for the ODAC championship and only one team can win, those are heavy weighted wins, right? So if one of those teams did win this weekend, you know, maybe only one team makes it now from the ODAC when it comes tournament time. And it's crazy to think that we're already talking about that after 1 week. But that's just kind of the reality of the situation. I know in the past we've talked about how these early games really matter. And York and Lynchburg both play great schedules, and I know they'll have a ton of tests along the way to prove themselves and try to get that at-large bid if it is needed. But, you know, just thinking about it as we're in February, that these games are really important, and, you know, you got to make everyone count. And I know there's a lot of teams that are just starting to figure things out. They're just rolling the ball out for the first time, right? The NESCAC team started practicing for, you know, the first times last week, and that might be a good segue as we want to touch on the North a little bit. Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have an article in the March issue of Inside Lacrosse about Williams. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that and tell us a little bit about what that story is going to look like?
Yeah, for sure. I had a chance to interview Williams head coach Jordan McCormick, and it's funny, like there are a lot of different kinds of coaches, and we were like kind of joking before the podcast started about how guys kind of fit into molds. And I think McCormick is like, he's the coach's coach. You know how people are saying like player's coach, but he's like the guy that everyone, like if he was walking down the street and you saw him, you'd be like, that guy coaches something. Like that's just how he came off to me. And I mean that in the best way possible. No slight at all. With the rise of the Williams program is probably, if you've paid attention to wins and losses in the NESCAC, probably befuddling to people who haven't checked in the last like 5 years or so. But he's got this guy, I can't even tell you how under the radar this guy was from like all of our coverage. But looking back on just stats in general from 2019, Jake Hasse, okay? Or Jake Hasse. Hasse, that's it.
Hasse.
I asked him to tell me what
week one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I asked him how to pronounce it too, and he told me, but it got muddled in my brain. 99 points as a freshman.
A freshman.
In the NESCAC. A freshman. This year, he's going to be a sophomore. That team's run was incredible. They were the only team to beat Amherst twice. They lost to them in the NCAA semifinal, but they beat them in the regular season of the NESCAC and the NESCAC semifinal for the tournament. That is insane. And they did it on the back of just like a pairs offense with really unselfish players. Like Coach McCormick's main point to me was like, just got to build a team totally unselfishly. He's got two young assistants helping him out there. I just think that that's like a great recipe for success, because I think that the new, and I've said this a couple times in the podcast, I really believe in the knowledge base of Division III coaches. And like, if you look back, it's not all just D1, good, like going down and having success at D3 or even having success at D1. The talent, I think, in the coaching circles is there for D3 guys to really make an impact, and young D3 guys to really make an impact on the sport as a whole, regardless of what division they're in. So I really like how everything has come together for this Williams team. They're young, they're hungry, they're all reloaded. They only lost one starting defender. I mean, they're ranked the highest they've ever been in the IL poll at number 3 going into the season. They're a threat. And if you think they're not because their mascot is a purple cow, you're wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say number 3 in the Inside Lacrosse Face-Off Yearbook and my personal pick to win the NCAA tournament this year, holding up the crown of Philly. Dan, what do you think of this team?
Yeah, they're dangerous. They're really high-powered on offense. They have a midfielder that doesn't exactly go under the radar, but his name is Brendan Hoffman, and he can shoot the crap out of the ball. He's always just working off ball and catching it loaded, quick release, overhand, and just hammers these shots. A lot of them come from your boy, Jake Hasse, or how are we going to say it? What do you want to go with?
We'll just go Jake.
We'll get corrected on Twitter. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. We can give him like the LeBron treatment where he's just Jake.
Yeah, that works for me. So Jake is finding Hoffman and just lobbing these balls up, letting him hammer these shots. It's like it's really fun to watch.
Let me throw my theory at you for my D3 roster theory for great teams. Every D3 team has a Brendan Hoffman because he's just a gigantic, like tall. I think Hoffman's like 6'6", like 210 pounds. Like every team has a guy. Every great team has a guy like that. And then the rest of the team is all from York, Gunnar Reynolds. There's just a ton of Gunnar Reynolds on every across the country. And I mean that like in a great way. Like he's the best or the second best player, like shorter, stockier guy, like running through people. I'm not just saying that because that's what I was, but that's kind of like the D3 kind of formula. That's just part of it. I have this idea for writing an article where it's just like every kind of mystical thing that makes a great D3 team. And it's like, oh, an awkward goalie or like, you know, a face-off guy that just rolls over people, an attackman that all he does is shoot. You know, I think, and I mean it not just in the comical sense, but it's true. This formula for a great D3 team like exists out there. And I'm obsessed with cracking it. It's a big part of this podcast. Where we put out thoughts like this. I really enjoy that aspect of it.
You don't have Hoffman's to convince me that every team needs a Gunnar Reynolds, man. He didn't dress his freshman year. And I think this year he's going to be making a legit push for All-American. Him and Dylan Wolf, both. And then their first game against WNL, they came out and crushed it. Wolf drew the long pole matchup, but he goes 3-3. And so teams are going to have to choose who they short, and both of them will make you pay.
It's funny you mentioned that, Kyle, because as you're rattling off those unique kind of like characters within teams, like I think we can all think of someone who fills that role, right? You're talking about the offensive guy that shoots way too many shots, right? I got a text, Dan and I both got a text from Austin Stewart this week. He'd be like, hey, when's the D3 pod coming back out? And he is a perfect example of that, who led that Lynchburg 2015 to the national championship because he took like the most absurd amount of shots in history. Granted, he practiced every day and was out there early with a bucket of balls, and he made them count. But like, you're right, there is that one sort of like, I don't know what the best word is, but there's like a characteristic and a character on each team that is what makes D3 cool and is different than a bunch of these like 6'4" downhill Dodgers and 6'6" defensemen. Is this group of characters, this cast of characters, makes each team unique in their own way, and that's a pretty cool dynamic.
Absolutely. I mean, D1 is for the DVR, as far as I'm concerned.
I like that.
Mostly because you can't really record D3 games, but, like, you know, also for watching later purposes.
Should we make that the slogan of the podcast?
We'll let them have the
D3. I mean, it's already a hashtag, man. All right, it's already a hashtag.
I feel like there's a t-shirt coming out soon. But anyway, let's stick with D3 here. Let's preview the weekend upcoming. Like we talked about in the beginning, some big early season matchups that are really excited. So I think we have three or four games to dive a little bit deeper into, and then there's a handful of games we want to mention. I'll say this, not this week, but most weeks, Matt Kinnear will wrap up these podcasts with an interview with a Division III or Division II coach. There will be some Division II chatter on here as we dive in a little more in the season with the high level and focus of D3 games for the first week. We're going to stick to just D3 this week, but there definitely will be some D2 content. So as we wrapped up talking about Williams, let's stick in the North as we have one really prominent Northern team in RIT this weekend who is playing Midwestern powerhouse Mike Plantholz's squad from Ohio Wesleyan. Kyle, as our Jon Snow, as our warden in the North, what do you think about this RIT team? Coach Kuhn always has an amazing lineup of his Canadian vibe. And Owoo is a team that had dominated the Midwest for a while, and it seems like Denison has really carried that mantle over the past few years. How do you break this game down?
Yeah, I think, you know, RIT, like, I'm IL North, but, like, they're, like, North. I don't know if you've ever been to Rochester. It's a apocalyptic land, but luckily there's a lot of great lacrosse there of all levels. I think RIT, you know, they lost Sean Nally and Cam Isaac to graduation, but I do think that you're right about the Canadian part. There's a ton of guys coming back for that offense. Quinn Commandant should be back after we saw him get injured in the Mustang Classic, like, live last year, Josh, you and I. And I think he was pegged to be their number one scorer before he got hurt. So that's some good news. Dawson Tate also returns there. But another guy that RIT lost that I just want to shout out because I don't think we talked enough about him last year was Trevor Smith. You know, one of my favorite players to watch in D3 as an LSM. You know, dude was out there shooting and passing BTBs like it was easy. But the main draw for RIT besides their offense is Walker Hare, who was the Ensign C. Marklin Kelly Jr. Award winner as the top goalie in D3 last year. He's going to have, you know, a defense that is, again, missing some pieces, but senior Alex Maruna is back, and he's one of their best guys. So I think RIT is – I was surprised when I saw how high Ken ranked them for D3, just because they did lose a ton of points. But I do think they're still going to be a top five team no matter what. As far as Ohio Wesleyan goes, not great news there. They lost their top four scorers.
Yep, a lot of points. Four. Talk about York points. I'm looking at 83, 73, 65, 60, all to graduation.
That is not good. I think if you're looking at a kind of a silver lining here, though, you know, last year a big part of their problem was a really young defense. They routinely started, you know, a rotation of two or three freshmen, and now all those players are sophomores. Year better, year wiser, hopefully for them. They are returning their starting goalie, Joey Sikenzia.
Sure,
nailing pronunciations. It's pod one. He's a 53% kind of guy, but I think that can go up if the defense does improve with more experience. But all that being said, I just don't see Ohio Wesleyan beating RIT to start the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a 8+ goal differential here. Dan, you have any thoughts?
No, I feel similar. They're going to have to figure it all out in the beginning, right? They lost everybody, so there's going to be a rebuilding at least period of time. Not necessarily to say they won't be able to figure anything out this season, but for game one, it doesn't seem likely.
Yeah, especially with such an interesting matchup, and RIT is a team that's, you know, kind of tough to prepare for, and they play a little bit differently than most teams. Let's move forward. We mentioned Lynchburg. They lost to Salisbury last weekend. They play host to the Diplomats of Franklin O. Marshall this weekend. FNM scrimmaged Cabrini last weekend, so take this for what it's worth. Sources tell me that it was a pretty close game. FNM was up at halftime with a lot of the starters in, so going against the national champs, you know, Cabrini still holds that title, so I really like this FNM team. In my head, I broke this thing down in a few different ways, and the first key matchup I sort of see in this game is Tyler Gallagher, who I mentioned earlier, a monster defender for Lynchburg, and Kevin Mollahan. We've been talking about Kevin Mollahan for 4 years. I feel like he's been there forever. A lefty, super dynamic playmaker. The kid is just a scoring machine. He's a monster. I think he easily could have been last year when we were picking Division III All-Americans. There were like six stud attackmen, and he was on that second team. But he's a monster. He's super crafty with the ball. And what's cool about it is now that he's a senior, I feel like he really has a lot of help. So FNM's leading scorer, 100-point scorer last year. Luke Keating is back. He's a senior this year. This dude is a monster. He is an absolute freak. He's going to get the pull every single time. They graduated a couple of those other first-line middies, but they have some young guys who I think are playing really well, and I think they'll contribute early. In Tucker McBride and AJ Rigsby, I think it's their time to step up and kind of support Keating, as I'm sure he is going to get the pull every time. And that's another kind of interesting dynamic of this game, is Luke Keating being, you know, the guy along with Mollahan for FNM, while Kevin Rogers is sort of that guy for Lynchburg. Another loss for FNM was George Briggs. He was a senior who had a ton of assists last year, so I think Keating benefited a lot from that in the points category. So we'll be see how, you know, how easy it is for him to create his own space and, you know.
Yeah, especially in this game. I think they're going to put Tyler Gallagher on him, and he showed on Saturday he can really, really, really play some cover D. So it'll be a matchup that I think may end up favoring Lynchburg, actually. And I mean, they're going to have to send picks to him in order for Keating to get a step. I don't think he's going to be able to do it on his own. And so if they're going to be able to send picks, they're going to have to send picks to him constantly. And Gallagher showed that he can do that and get through those with ease after he guarded Ferrer on Saturday.
Yeah, another interesting note in this is, you know, we mentioned the lack of faceoff wins for Lynchburg and Salisbury this past weekend. FNM has a pretty solid 1-2 punch in Jack Beattie and Timmy Horty. So that'll be another kind of leap the Hornets will have to make, is they'll have to try to figure it out and make it a scrap at the X. I think if they can make it a scrap, and this is a 60-40, 50-50 game. I think the Hornets are the better team. But that face-off is still just such a question mark for me. I don't know how they overcome it. But at the end of the day, they're a really good squad, and I think that Coach Kadoka will get really creative in finding ways to get them possessions as they're going to need them, right? Can't score if you don't have the ball. So I'm really looking forward to this one. It's been a game they've played, you know, going back 4 or 5 years now. There's been some really good games. Last year, I believe, was an 11-8 game up at FNM, 11-9. So I think it's going to be a good one. Dan or Kyle, you guys, any more thoughts before we move on?
No, I just wanted to shout out the FNM alum defender that only checks my forearms in pickup.
There you go.
I really don't like you. If you're looking, you need to stop.
In somewhat of the same vein, but not really. If you're looking for a great Instagram follow, the FNM men's lacrosse Instagram is on fire. Don't let the dips get hot is something they say early and often. And they do a really good job of with the graphics and highlights and keeping things easy for us to follow. So shout out to whoever does that. You know who you are. Let's move on with two other teams we've mentioned in this podcast. Washington and Lee plays Denison this weekend. Dan, what do you got?
Yes, so they're going to have to rebound after that York loss. A couple deficiencies to pick up on are generating a step on offense, right? They kind of struggled to do so on Saturday against York. So what they do to alleviate that issue will be, you know, pretty interesting to watch moving forward. And, you know, they don't have a whole lot of time to figure out what they're going to do against Denison. They're going to have to, you know, get something going and trust that whatever they're going to put in and implement moving forward helps them get some more looks.
Denison, you know, not to cut you off, but I mentioned Malahan feeling like he's been there forever. The Pitroff kid is still there, correct?
Yeah.
That kid is a monster as well. Right, Kyle? I know you and I have talked to him before. That kid is a monster. Another kid who has been there forever, and they've been knocking on the door. I think WNL is going to have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder as we talk about these early season games really being meaningful in terms of, you know, end of the season where you fall if you don't get that kind of conference ODAC at large bid. I feel like WNL is going to come out swinging this one, but these early matchups, you never really know what you're going to get.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah, I think with...
Oh, go ahead, Kyle.
Sorry. I think with Denison, I mean, you're looking at a team that lost 4 of their top 5 scorers. It's a lot of points to make up for. So I'm really intrigued to see how this game kind of shakes out, especially given that WNL last week seemed like they could just score whenever they needed to. Not whenever they wanted to, but they needed a goal and they got it. And that's kind of something that you can't drop. And I know I just said previously that York could have won that game by a lot of goals, but Washington Lee scored. They scored weird goals. They scored goals that looked like the ball was on the side of the net and the goalie it like snuck in under his ankle. You know, like that kind of like clutch goal scoring, that goes a long way. And I think this is a big test for Denison early.
Yeah, definitely. And who they decide to actually play and fill in those roles that all those guys graduated from are going to be really important because Pitroff is a feed-first guy, right? So who he's actually feeding the ball to is going to make a really, really big deal as to whether that ball goes from his stick into the net or his stick into the goalie's stick and they're pushing transition the other way, you know?
No, I love it. Quick shout-out to my guy, Steven Villacorta, face-off man for Denison. He played for me in my high school team. Hopefully he'll be getting some reps this year. Let's start to wrap this thing up. There's 3 or 4 games that are worth mentioning just to keep an eye on this weekend. At the end of the day, everyone who's listening to the D3 lovers out there, the biggest and best thing you can do to help support Division III lacrosse is go to watch these live streams. So many of them are really good. There's definitely some that are a struggle, but the more you watch, the more these teams and these programs are going to invest into that stuff, and it's continue to get better. So let's start a little bit of an odd one. Illinois Wesleyan versus Rhodes. Rhodes is a team that I believe got some love in our face-off yearbook rankings. If I'm checking this correctly, you know, they were like a top 25 team, I think, or very close to it at least. So they have made the tournament the past few years. Illinois Wesleyan is a team we've talked about here and there on this podcast as just putting up like an insane amount of points. They're a really fun team to scout and watch film on. They put up a ton of points. So I think with Rhodes and you know, the success they've had over the past few years, and Illinois Wesleyan, I know these teams have played each other early over the past few years, and it's been a pretty close game. So I'm really looking forward to this one. Kyle, any other games you have upcoming this weekend you're looking forward to?
No, I just wanted to do my own shout out here. I just interviewed, and speaking of us doing also D2 content, I just interviewed Flyers coach Joe Peruzzi, who his team in D2 just beat Lake Erie. Lewis College beat Lake Erie in their first game ever. The entire team, except for like two players, are freshmen. It's a brand new team. They've never played before, and they just won their first game. One of the teams that they scrimmaged to get ready for that game was Illinois Wesleyan, and Illinois Wesleyan put a hurting on them. And the coach was like, listen, you know, Coach Peruzzi was like, listen, we want to play good teams like that. I mean, we're going to learn from that. We're going to figure out what we're doing from that. Now, I don't know how much that reads into how they're going to do against Rhodes, but if they're running and gunning, fun and gunning again, fun team to watch. You know, like one of the great things about D3 is there's teams of all types. You know, even if you go outside the top 20, there's teams that play styles where you're just like, that is wild.
Yeah.
What?
Going and
what possessed you? Yeah, to teach that to your kids. But it's great. Like I love that kind of like wild card aspect. And there's just so many teams. And I'm sorry in advance that we're not gonna get to your team if your team is like super obscure. But if you're talking about obscure teams, I'm the guy you want to talk to. Hit me up. My DMs are open at all times. If you got a cool story, I'm on it.
That's a good segue. You know, we definitely got hit up by a lot of people from like DeSales last year about why are you guys not talking about this team? They're undefeated, all this stuff. And, you know, we're going to try to cover this as much as we possibly can. The addition of Dan, you know, on the D3 side is going to be huge for this group of listeners right now. So he has a couple pieces on the website right now, kind of following that Lynchburg-Salisbury and WNL York game and a little bit of a preview for this weekend as well. We'll bring back in Ken Stockman. Matt Kinnear will make his legendary reappearance. Last three games, just to kind of touch on, I'm not going to dive into them. Cabrini, the national champs, play Haverford this weekend. Dickinson plays St. Mary's, and Gettysburg plays Messiah, all of which could have some implications as we head towards the end of the season. So that's going to do it for the first episode. We're going to continue to get better. Another one, Stevenson or Sinus. Our Sinus kind of got their flow going when they upset Stevenson last year. So make sure you keep your eyes on that one as well. As I was saying, that's going to do it for this podcast. We're going to continue to get better as we go on, getting our kind of flow and rhythm a little bit better. And as these teams continue to develop, continuing to try to have great interviews and bring some of that in-depth analysis that, you know, we know there's a market for the D3 listeners and trying to bring you guys some cool, fresh perspective and give you guys something to, you know, chew on until we get to the games this weekend. So like Kyle said, you know, send us a note at JoshDavy5 on Twitter. Kyle, what are your social handles?
Just at the Kyle Devitt, DEVITTE. People forget the E.
I don't know why. That's cool. Dan knows I'm about to ask him his Twitter handle and he has to look it up what it is right now. So Dan, are you ready?
I do have a Twitter. That's confirmed. What it is, I'm checking.
Do you have a smartphone? Do you have a smartphone or a
I do. Yeah.
Flipper?
No, it's pretty smart, I think. I trust it.
What's the handle?
It's dkaplan46.
Awesome. So let us know if there are questions or teams you guys want to talk about. You know, we're doing this for you guys, so excited to dive in and like Kyle said, uncover some cool stories and we all like this podcast and do it for fun because we love Division III. So appreciate everyone listening. Let us know some feedback and we'll talk to you next week.